Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Friday's Ultimate Fighter 25 Redemption Finale, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Now, we broke down how we did in our last event in the UFC 213 podcast, so just check that one out if you want a recap. So back to the present, the Tough 25 finale features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Friday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off, in the women's strawweight division is a battle between Tisha Torres, who is 8-1, and Juliana Lima, who is 9-3, and this will be aired on UFC Fight Pass. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how's the public shifted things so far?
Up in Torres, minus 270, the comeback on Lima at plus 190. Looking over a sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it is currently Torres minus 370, the comeback on Lima at plus 310. So needless to say, early action coming in Torres' way, not really surprised by it. But you got to give Lima some respect. I mean, the girl's definitely a talented fighter. She's got that grinding style that in most cases is able to get the job done. And then she's getting better with her striking. So Lima's the type of fighter that wants to look to get the fight to the ground, grind you out, you know, win on points basically, because she's not really a finisher. She does have a little bit of power, some decent ground and pound like I mentioned, but overall she's just that grinding fighter that's going to win on the cards more times than not. Now her striking is getting better. I mean, she showcased that a little bit in her fight against Aldridge. Aldridge is not a bad striker, and Lima was able to do really well in the striking department in that fight as well. So Lima's improving. She's getting better. She's getting more confident. Even at age 35, she's definitely a player at 115 pounds, and she's not an easy out. So I think you got to respect her a little bit, but stylistically, how she matches up with Torres. Torres does have pretty solid takedown defense, so she should be able to keep this fight upright. And then on the feet, she's going to be quicker. She's going to be better overall. I mean, she throws a variety of techniques that are clean, that are effective. I mean, the only negative I could really say about Torres at times is, I mean, against bigger fighters, she could get bullied a little bit, and Lima is that type of fighter that might give her a little bit of problems. And at the same time, Torres doesn't have that finishing ability, doesn't have that submission game that she can hop on your back real quick, even though she's capable. I'm not saying that she has no subs, but she doesn't get the job done that way. You know, she's more of, again, a point fighter, so she's going to go out there and throw some combinations together. She's going to look good by doing it. I mean, she's got good movement. She's got good speed. She looks good while she's winning fights, but she's basically a point fighter, so she's going to have to outpoint Lima. She's going to have to maintain her space, and she's going to have to score at will, and I think she will do that, though. I think she's going to be a little bit too much standing for Lima, and I think Lima is going to struggle getting Torres down. So basically, that's the way these girls match up. It should be a pretty decent fight overall, because both these girls bring it. I mean, for three rounds, you're going to get their best, so you got to respect that. But I think overall, I do agree with the early action coming in towards his way. Where the line is right now, I think it is a tad high, though, so be careful if you're betting this fight. But I do think Torres is going to get the W, so I'm picking her to win.
And I can completely understand why everybody's coming in on Torres. She's one of the best strawweights on the planet, and she fights, as Nick mentioned, the point fighting style, but it's an aggressive style. She does put some heat in her punches. She just doesn't have a lot of power. So she just out-volumes her opponents and then usually is able to win a pretty one-sided decision. Now, she does have some kryptonite with wrestling, at least in the past. On The Ultimate Fighter, she lost two fights on the show because she was getting out-wrestled. That's become a huge focus for her since then, so she has not been out-wrestled ever since The Ultimate Fighter. But that's Juliana Lima's path to victory. I mean, Lima's all about the takedowns. She averages 1.8 takedowns per fight. I think she'll be aggressively looking for the takedowns here because she is just, even though she's improved in her stand-up, Lima is just not even in the same level, even close, to Tisha Torres on the feet. So she is going to be eating strikes. Torres throws more than twice as much volume of strikes that she lands in her fights. And despite throwing more, she's more accurate. And her defense is way better. So, I mean, this is just a really, really bad matchup on the feet for Lima. Lima needs to close the distance, get this in the clinch, get it to the ground, do whatever she can to keep it out of Torres's world. And I just don't know if she's going to be able to keep that up and keep Torres out of her comfort zone for three straight rounds. Maybe Lima can get a takedown or two here at some point, but I think Torres has worked on her wrestling enough that she'll be able to stuff just about every takedown that Lima throws her way. And even if she does get taken down, I think she can work her way back to her feet. So I'm going to side with Tisha Torres here. I just think she outworks Lima and outstrikes her and outpoints her and gets the decision win. Now moving up to the featherweight division, we have Gray Maynard, who is 13-7-1 with one no contest, taking on Taruto Ishihara, who is 10-3-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Ishihara -175, the comeback on Maynard at +135. Right now, it just got bet up as I'm looking at the Don Best screen right now. Over 5 dimes, it's Ishihara -310. The comeback on Maynard is +255. So when we started this podcast, it wasn't quite that high. So action continues to come in on Ishihara. A lot of people are basically fading Maynard's chin. I mean, let's face it, the guy has been chinny to say the least. He has dropped down 145 pounds and looked okay. I know a lot of people were going to be not so happy with him based on his last performance against Ryan Hall. But I mean, stylistically, that was just a weird fight overall. And it was a tricky one for Maynard because he didn't want to really play that ground game too much with Hall. And Hall wanted to play that ground game, even though he was landing at will with some of those kicks. So it was just a weird stylistic matchup for Maynard. Before that, though, Maynard has looked a little bit better. His chin held up against the likes of Bruno. I know Bruno is not somebody you could brag about to win. Oh, what a huge notch on your resume, especially with the background and the impressive record that Maynard does have. So there's a lot of question marks on the table. I mean, Maynard's 37 years old. Like I said, in my opinion, I've thought he's been a shot fighter for a while, and most of you guys know that. I mean, I've been fading him, I've been betting against him, and have been pretty successful overall. So I understand why the public's coming in on Ishihara this time. I just think it might be a little bit too much disrespect. I mean, Maynard still brings a lot to the table, and his wrestling is going to be the key factor here. If he can get this fight down to the ground, Ishihara does have decent takedown defense. It's not going to be easy to do, but if Maynard can get the fight to the ground, he can do what he does best and outgrind Ishihara. On the feet, you can't take him lightly, because even though Maynard is probably going to be the punching bag in this fight, I mean, he does have a little bit of power, so he's got that knockout ability, and if Ishihara is not careful, he could walk into something. But outside of that, there's a big advantage on the feet for Ishihara. He has that knockout power. The problem with Ishihara, though, in his last fight, he was very disappointing. A lot of people were expecting fireworks in that fight against Lobov, and Lobov was able to beat him pretty clear. I mean, all of us were pretty much surprised there, because Lobov was a decent little underdog there, and he came through and just made Ishihara look pretty bad to me. So I'm not sure what happened there with Ishihara. I was expecting better, but I'm sure he's probably going to rebound here against Maynard, because again, it's kind of a matchup where if he could stay upright, he should get the win here against an aging Gray Maynard, and that'll be an impressive victory for Ishihara, one of the best that he's ever had in his career as far as name recognition goes, for sure. So it is what it is. I'm kind of pulling for the older Gray Maynard here. I'd like to see him just stay relevant, I guess, a little bit. Or, you know, if he's going to – I honestly don't want to see him fight, and I think he should have retired, and from all accounts, I've heard that he was financially secure enough that he probably could retire. So this is just the love of the sport for Maynard that he's continuing to fight here. So I don't want to see him get hurt. He's been one of those fighters that I've been a fan of for a while. So hopefully he doesn't suffer a bad knockout loss here. But I think that's probably what happens. So I'll pick Ishihara to get the knockout like most of you. So I do agree with the early action. Where the line is now, though, -310, there's no way you could bet Ishihara. Just stay away and watch a fight. Or out there for the prop bettors, I mean, there's always the case where you could bet Ishihara by knockout, because if he wins, that's probably how he wins. So you'll get a better price on Ishihara by knockout. But outside of that, again, I'm picking Ishihara to win, and I just hope it's a good fight.
Yeah, Gray Maynard's a guy that I kind of wished had never decided to drop to featherweight. I mean, he was such a big, powerful, lightweight. He was so, you know, scary at times. And, you know, once those fights with Frankie Edgar happened, they just kind of took a piece of, he lost a piece of himself every fight. And then when he ended up getting finished by Edgar in the trilogy, that was kind of the beginning of the end for him. Like, he's never really been the same, and that he's just looked worse and worse every time out until he loses a decision to Ryan Hall in the stand-up. I mean, that was just a crazy fight. I understand it, but man, Maynard looked so bad, and it was so frustrating, and I just wish that he would stop fighting. I really do. Maybe this one will decide it for him. Now, Ishihara, as Nick mentioned, had a really rough performance his last time out against Lobov, and I think that was because he was facing someone that just had way better striking technique than him. Ishihara relies on his own power and aggression in fights, and he was able to just steamroll some lesser opponents. And, I mean, the guy's definitely capable. I mean, either hand, he can put people out. He has strong kicks as well. But he faced somebody that was able to sit down on their punches, that had some decent movement, that, you know, just knew what they were doing on the feet. And they were just, and Lobov just made him look silly. The problem is, Gray Maynard is not nearly the technician on the feet. And he has reason to be concerned. Maynard on the feet gets hit and gets put out. He does not have a good chin anymore at all. And he cannot afford to even get hit by a jab from Ishihara. I'm serious. Like, that's how bad Maynard's chin is, and that's how good Ishihara's power is. So, I mean, if Maynard's going to win this fight, he needs to wrestle, and he needs to just keep Ishihara on his back for three straight rounds. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do that. I mean, I just have lost a lot of faith in Maynard, and I really, maybe this will be the fight that decides it. I'm not rooting for Maynard, because if he has a good performance or if he actually wins, then he's going to keep fighting, and I just don't want him to keep fighting at this point. So I'm expecting Ishihara to knock him out the first time he really lands his hands on him, so I'm going to pick Ishihara to get the win here. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a women's bantamweight contest between Jessica I, who is 11-6 with one no contest, and Aspen Ladd, who is 5-0. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Open Ladd -135, the comeback on I at -105. Right now, looking over at five times, is Ladd -120, the comeback on I even money. So line margins have tightened up a little bit into action coming into this fight. So really nothing significant. Line staying pretty steady. And there's going to continue to be two-way action, I think. But if anything, Ladd probably creeps up as far as price goes by fight time, I think. I mean, unfortunately for I, she's on a losing skid that a lot of people would have already been cut if they went on a four-fight losing skid as well. But I, in my opinion, deserves to still have a roster spot because of the talent she's faced. So I get why the UFC's kept her aboard a little bit, because she's had some really close fights. So I know there's a lot of haters out there that are going to say, she shouldn't be on the roster, all that stuff. But if you look at her fights and who she's competed against, I mean, her losses, the only person that's really, in my opinion, beat her decisively was Sarah McMahon. I mean, you could argue the tape fight as soon as that big punch landed. I mean, she took over there as well. But outside of that, against Pena, I mean, I was respectable against a very good opponent in Pena, which obviously is in title contention. She's in the mix, at least for that title. That Betsy Cohea fight could have went either way, honestly. I know that she kind of let her foot off the gas and, you know, she lost that fight. Not that Betch is a well-respected fighter, but still, the point being that I is the type of fighter that's had a lot of close losses, that she's competed with the best in the division, and she's kind of right there. It's just she can't get over that hump. So I do have a lot of respect for Jessica I. I think she's a very talented fighter. I do understand people's complaints about her not putting her foot on the gas and being more aggressive at times. She sits back and waits a little bit too much, and that could get her in trouble. And that's what's costing her some of these losses and fights as well. Now, her defense at times is a little bit disappointing as well. She gets hit a little bit more than you'd like to see. She needs to work on the head movement a little bit more so she doesn't get tagged as much. But you could say the same thing about her opponent, Ladd, here. So basically, this is an interesting fight, to say the least, because you have a veteran in I right now taking on the up-and-coming younger fighter. Ladd is only 22 years old. She's undefeated. She's a prospect. She's an Invicta fighter that's coming over with some hype. So Ladd, with a big win over I here, would definitely skyrocket her career on the right track up towards, you know, I mean, working her way up the ladder at 135. So this is a very important fight. But Ladd is very hittable as well. If you look at her performances, I mean, she's put on really good shows. Ladd does put her foot on the gas. She hits really hard. She's a strong fighter. She's well-rounded as well. So there's a lot of good things to like about Ladd. But the problem being, if you look at her strike defense, she's, like I said, very hittable. She eats a lot of punches. Now, she does kind of walk through those punches and has her way with most opponents. So she hasn't really shown signs of being in trouble when she's, you know, getting smacked or whatever. But I think a step above a lot of the opponents that Ladd's faced already. So this is going to be a tough fight. That's why you're seeing a near pick'em fight for a lady that's been on a 4-fight losing skid. You still got to respect I mean, and the odds indicate that a little bit as well. So I think this is a pick'em type of fight. I think really we're going to probably see another split decision type of fight here, because both ladies are going to land. Both ladies are going to have their moments in this fight, and just whoever can, I guess, you know, dig deep and put a little bit more pressure on as it goes is going to probably sway the judges and pull it out. So I understand most people are probably going to like Ladd here. So I am on the fence about this going back and forth. I just think that Ladd is in a little bit too much here. I think that I is going to be able to fight a little bit better than she has. She knows her, obviously. She's up against it. I mean, her back's up against the wall. If she loses this fight, the UFC is not going to keep her on the roster. It's a must-win fight for I, whereas Ladd, she's making her debut. You can kind of make an excuse for octagon jitters and maybe not performing her best in her first fight into the UFC. So she's going to stick around for a while. So I think the desperation and the hunger of I here is going to probably excel her over the top if she gets the win. So it's not going to be a popular opinion, but I do think Jessica Eye, this is a winnable fight for her, and I think she's probably going to get it done. So I'm going to pick Jessica Eye to defeat Aspen Ladd.
And personally, I don't think this is that good of a matchup for Jessica Eye. Aspen Ladd, while she is hittable on the feet, at least she can absorb those hits. Jessica, on the other hand, when she gets hit by a good shot, she goes down. Like, she's actually one of the chinnier fighters in the women's bantamweight division, in my opinion. So I'm definitely concerned if they just get into a firefight on the feet, that Ladd, who is the more aggressive fighter, could just outwork her and outpace her. And then if they're standing toe to toe and Jessica decides to bite down on her mouthpiece and just go for it, that I's the one that goes down. Now, that's not the only part of Ladd's game, though. I mean, Ladd, in all of her finishes, she takes fights to the ground. She gets top position. She advances to some sort of dominant position where she can posture up, and then she just brutalizes opponents with ground and pound. Now, she's not an elite wrestler, but she's a good scrambler. She's able to close the distance in fights, and when she gets top position, I mean, she is tenacious. I mean, elbows, punches, fight finishing power. So that's really where Aspen Ladd will have the biggest advantage, because I has found herself on her back multiple times throughout her career. Granted, it was against elite competition, Misha Tate, Sarah McMahon, Juliana Pena. So those were all some of the best wrestlers and ground fighters in the women's bantamweight division. So is Aspen Ladd at that level? No. She doesn't have that elite level wrestling, but she is capable of getting a single leg, getting a double leg if Jessica is too aggressive. And my main issue though is that she gets all fired up in fights and then she just sits back and doesn't do enough. I mean, she had no business losing to Betch Kohea, but she sat back and let Kohea dictate too much of the fight and ended up losing a split decision. So if that Jessica Eye shows up, there's no chance she beats Aspen Ladd, because Ladd will just outwork her on the feet without even having to worry about the takedowns. But if the same Eye that shows up that fought, Sarah Kaufman in her UFC debut, then she's got a good chance. But that Jessica Eye, I think, disappeared when she started getting hit in fights and getting hurt on the feet. So I don't know. I just don't think Jessica Eye's heart is in it as much anymore. And I think Aspen Ladd is a really talented, undefeated fighter on the rise. And I think Aspen Ladd takes this fight. So I'm a fan of Jessica Eye, but I just think Aspen Ladd is moving in a complete opposite direction compared to her. And I expect Aspen Ladd to probably win a decision. Now, moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Ed Herman, who is 24-12 with one no contest, taking on CB Dolloway, who is 16-9. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Dolloway, minus 155, the comeback on Herman at plus 115. Looking over at the line right now at five dimes, it is currently Dolloway minus 185. The comeback on Herman is at plus 160, so a little bit more action coming in Dolloway's way. I get it. I think he is the better fighter in a lot of ways here in this matchup. I mean, Dolloway, in my opinion, is a better wrestler. I think Dolloway overall right now is probably the better striker. I mean, with his boxing at least. I mean, Herman does mix things up well, and it will be close back and forth on the feet with these guys a little bit. I just think Herman's a little bit slower, a little bit more hittable right now at this point of his career. Although Dolloway's chin scares me probably more so. I mean, at times, even though Herman is the aging guy here and has been through MMA year wise a lot more wars and has a lot more damage put on his body at age 36. So that's why it's a tough fight. I mean, both these guys have that wrestling background. Both these guys can strike, have a little bit of knockout power on the feet. Both these guys also have a submission game they can go to as well that they can win underground with. So, and their submission defense at times is a bit sketchy. So offensively, both these guys can have a lot of success. Defensively, both these guys are flawed and both of them are a little bit chinny, like I said. So it's really who lands the cleaner shot first or who makes the first mistake is probably going to lose this fight. But overall, I think you got to lean Dolloway. I mean, he's been out since his KO loss to Mark Court back in December 2015. So he's lost three straight, and now he's moving up to light heavyweight, which Herman moved up to light heavyweight not too long ago, and he's been out since July of last year as well. So and that was a KO loss to Krylov, which Krylov's no longer on the roster, which is interesting. But this is just a tough fight to call because, I mean, like I said, it's hard to really, for me right now, trust either guy. I thought Dolloway was really making some strides there for a little while, and he was looking to maybe make a run at the middleweight title, it looked like. I mean, that's how close he was getting, at least. I mean, he was right underneath, of course. He wasn't in that title mix, but, I mean, he was definitely making some noise and getting some attention. I mean, he had some quality fights, like the Bisping fight, for example. That was a pretty close fight, and obviously Bisping's wearing that strap right now. So I think Dolloway definitely still has a little bit more upside, but, I mean, both these guys, I think their best days are probably behind them, and a loss here for either guy probably will be the last fight in the UFC, at least for these guys. So it's a must-win fight for both guys, I think, right now. I got to side with Dolloway. I just think he is a little bit better at this stage of his career, but, again, hard to trust him. I would not lay a $185 on that chin right now either, even if it is against a guy like Herman. So not confident in this fight, but I'll pick Dolloway to win because I do think he should.
And I can understand Dolloway being on a bit more momentum. I mean, he was a guy that had a nice winning streak going in the middleweight division. He earned a headlining fight against Lyoto Machida. Did not go well for him, but then he was competitive against Bisping, and he was winning that fight against Marquardt until Marquardt caught him with the right hand. So, you know, he's on a losing streak, but it was against good competition, and he was facing that competition because he was a ranked middleweight that, you know, was looking like a player. So he was supposed to move up to light heavyweight last year against Barroso, but he had a freak injury the week of the fight in Cleveland for UFC 203, ended up not happening. So now he's finally making his light heavyweight debut. And what better type of opponent to make your light heavyweight debut than another middleweight that moved up to the light heavyweight division? So, I mean, Ed Herman's a guy that I would have picked CB Dolloway to beat in the middleweight division. And now that CB's moving up, I think his chin's going to be a little bit better. His boxing should be just as good as it was. And his boxing was really coming a long way. His defense is getting better. His offensive ability and power has looked phenomenal. And obviously, he's got the wrestling to fall back on if need be, and he should be able to use that against Herman. Herman, he showcased some power. I mean, he had an impressive performance against Tim Boach, but other than that, he's kind of been a bit of a punching bag. I mean, his last few fights at middleweight did not go well, and then obviously Krylov just mopped the floor with him. So I think this is a bad stylistic matchup for Herman. I think that Herman is a lot more on his way out than Dolloway. I think Dolloway might You know, I don't know if he'll ever be ranked at light heavyweight, but I think he can win a couple fights there and at least have a little bit of lasting power in the division. So I'm actually going to side with CB Dalloway here as well. I think he wins and possibly wins by knockout or at least a decision with his wrestling. So I'm going to pick CB Dalloway. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division for a bout of two fighters from the Ultimate Fighter Redemption season, two of the semifinalists, we have James Krause, who is 23-8, taking on Tom Galicio, who is 19-10. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Krause, minus 350 to come back on Galicio at plus 250. Right now, looking over Five Dimes, it is currently Krause minus 335 to come back on Galicio at plus 255. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, but, you know, lines staying basically steady. So there is two-way action coming in this fight as well. Seems to be appropriately set right now. It's tough, though, because you know what? Galicio, on the ground, man, he takes your back. You're done. I mean, he's obviously a grappling-based fighter. He's been around the sport for a long time, faced decent competition outside of the UFC. I'm really glad he's finally getting his shot on the roster, honestly, because even though he's – I mean, if you look at him, he's not maybe at times the most exciting fighter, and he doesn't kind of fit that typical mold that you'd like to see. But at the same time, man, his heart, his toughness, the work that he's put in throughout his whole career, and his ability to finish fights, especially by submission, and more so taking your back. That rear naked choke, like I said, is sick. If he gets your back, you're pretty much done. I mean, that's how good and technical he is with that. And he's strong, too. He's got that kind of wrestler strength with the choke. So Galicio is a very difficult out. On the show, he did really well. I mean, the guy pulled off some quality wins, I think, as well. This whole cast, let me just say this as well. I mean, there's a lot of guys that shouldn't probably be on the UFC roster, but I mean, from top to bottom, there wasn't really an easy fight for a lot of these guys on the show. I mean, all of them are savvy vets. They've all experienced, you know, decent competition. So it wasn't an easy route for anybody. So the two finalists that we're going to get to later, they deserve to be there. And man, you got to really take your hat off. In my opinion, I think the Ultimate Fighter, the show in general, has always been one of the toughest things. I mean, the aspect of getting, you know, through the house with all the drama and everything unfolding, all the weight cuts you have to do, just the mental aspect of things. It's really tough. I mean, your confidence has to be up and down as you go too. So making it that far, you got to take your hat off to each one of these guys, especially, like I said, the semifinalists and finalists here. And that's exactly what both these guys are. They made it to the semifinals, and unfortunately for them, they couldn't get over that hump and they lost in that spot. But Galicio, again, quality wins. I mean, if you look at the guy, I was surprised that he got as far as he did because of the matchups that he had. I mean, he goes out there and subs Eddie Gordon after Eddie Gordon was beating him. He hung in there and we got his back and ended up getting that choke. The same thing with Justin Edwards. Edwards almost had him knocked out on the show, but Galicio survived and got his back and subbed him. So Diego Lima was able to fight smart. He was able to outpoint Galicio. He kept him at distance. He ended up outstriking him. I mean, Galicio did get that fight down to the ground as well, but by that time it was a little bit too late, and Diego Lima's sub defense is pretty solid as well. So it just stylistically it was a bad matchup. Now for Krause, he's looked great too, man. I tell you what, I have a lot of respect for James Krause because, man, he's been putting in the work. I mean, it's a bit, Brian and I were talking before the show, it's a bit surprising that he's even on this because he was on a two fight winning streak in the UFC before, you know, he got this opportunity on the show. But on the show, Krause performed relatively well. And then Nijum in the second matchup for him, I mean, in the quarterfinals, I mean, that was a great fight. Krause actually was taking Nijum down, especially early on in that fight in round one. He was out wrestling a guy that usually likes to grind people out himself, and he looked great. Now, round two was a little bit tougher. Nijum was able to have his way, and they ended up going to the third round, and it was kind of back and forth, but Krause ended up getting that win. So it was a hard-fought battle. He got injured in that fight as well, but he showed his toughness. And again, he's showing his improvement in the wrestling aspect, whether it's offensively and defensively a little bit. I mean, his takedown defense, believe it or not, it's going to sound crazy because he has been put on his back even in the show, but it's getting better. Krause is not an easy guy to take down, but once you get him down, Krause is also dangerous. He could throw up those triangles. He could throw up those arm bars. He could try to scramble out and take your back. I mean, it's not easy to deal with Krause on the ground. So this is going to be a pretty interesting matchup. I mean, Krause, I think his takedown defense and his wrestling has gotten to the point where against a guy like Galicio, I think he could be all right here. He has to keep that distance. He's going to obviously have a huge edge on the feet. Krause is going to torch Galicio standing. I mean, that's why you're seeing this line where it's at right now. Stylistically, this is kind of a tough matchup. The only way, in my opinion, Galishio can win this fight is if he does hop on Krause's back along the way, which is possible. I mean, he does have a path to victory here. I mean, Krause has, you know, made some mistakes like that in the past, but in most cases, Krause's sub defense is good enough where he can scramble back out. And I think he'll probably be okay in this fight, because I know he knows what to look out for here for sure. So interesting fight. I'm glad both guys made it and got a shot even on this card as far as the actual event goes. So I'm going to pick Krause to win. I think, like I said, Galishio basically, I don't want to say he's a one-trick pony, but that one trick is pretty dang good. And I think that's the only way he is going to win this matchup with Krause. Other than that, I think Krause beats him. So Krause is my pick.
I'll keep this one a little bit simpler. I just don't think Tom Galishio can hang with James Krause. Nick mentioned that we talked about, why was James Krause even on this show? I mean, this is about redemption. This is about people that, you know, had a run in the UFC. It didn't go well. And then, they're fighting for a chance to get back in, or maybe their time on the Ultimate Fighter didn't go well. But James Krause made it to the UFC. He had a winning record in the UFC. He was on a 2-fight winning streak in the UFC. And then he just randomly was on this show. And it's clear that he deserves to be in the UFC. He had a nice run on the show, before he ran into, Jesse Taylor in the semifinals. But, I mean, he is a well-rounded fighter. He has an excellent ground game. He has very good stand-up ability. I mean, he just knows what he's doing. He's a talented veteran. Galishio, on the other hand, Nick wouldn't quite resort to calling him a one-trick pony, but I will. I mean, this guy needs to get a submission. He needs to hop on your back. He needs to tap you out, or he's going to lose. I mean, he was losing both of his fights on the show before he turned him around and ended up getting a submission. So I think James Krause's ground game, I mean, this guy is, you know, the grappling coach of his gym. So I don't expect that Galishio will be able to handle him on the ground, even if he gets him there. I mean, Krause, I mean, he went toe-to-toe with Pat Healy on the ground, ended up actually – I mean, he's had some really, really good fights in his career. And, I mean, hell, the UFC debut that he had was amazing when he, took on Sam Stout and won by submission. So I'm going to cut out the Pat Healy part. I was thinking of somebody else, but, James Krause, I mean, he's had so many great fights, and I mean, just his UFC debut in general, winning fight of the night, submission of the night against Sam Stout. I mean, the guy is definitely a very talented and capable fighter. And Galishio, I mean, if he doesn't hop on Krause's back and tap him out quickly, I don't see how he could possibly win. I think Krause just lights him up on the feet and knocks him out at some point. So my pick's going to be James Krause. Now, moving on to the headlining bout of the preliminary card, we have a women's strawweight contest between Angela Hill, who is 6-3, and Ashley Yoder, who is 5-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Hill, -245. The comeback on Yoder at +175. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is Hill -340. The comeback on Yoder at +280. So needless to say, action coming in on Hill. A little bit more respect for Hill for sure. I mean, she is an underrated fighter. At 6-3, Hill is definitely better than her record indicates. She's been putting in the work. I mean, I have nothing but respect for Hill. In fact, I mean, I've been on her in several of her fights. I mean, I think she is getting better. She's working that takedown defense. She's a great striker. I mean, I understand that a lot of people could look back and say that, you know, she was able, or she got picked apart a little bit in, to say the least, a little bit by Andrade in her last fight. But Andrade is just a beast. I mean, she was putting the heavy pressure on and deserved to get that win. But outside of that, Hill has typically outstruck most of her opponents, and she's that type of fighter. She could sprawl, brawl, and beat you up on the feet. I mean, it's fun to watch Hill strike. That's how talented she is. So I get it, and I think a lot of people think her takedown defense is going to hold up against Yoder, because that's really Yoder's only shot here. Yoder's going to be bigger. She's going to be taller. She's going to be longer. She's going to have a reach advantage, but that reach advantage isn't really going to come into play here on the feet, because Hill is definitely the better striker. She's going to be able to kind of neutralize that with her skill alone. So Yoder's going to have to get this fight to the ground, and her wrestling, I mean, it's okay. It's not bad, but I mean, according to you know, most that have given Hill problems, especially on the ground, it's probably not up to par in most people's minds. But I do think that Yoder's going to be a dangerous fight for Hill. I know Hill's tightened up that submission defense. She's tightened up that ground game overall, her wrestling, everything better. But I think in this fight, a three-round fight, Yoder's tough enough that she's going to withstand the punishment that Hill's going to dish out along the way. And this is going to sound crazy to a lot of people out there, but I think stylistically, this is kind of a tough matchup for Hill. I think Yoder, what she brings to the table on the ground, and that length will come into play a little bit, I think, on the ground a little bit more so than on the feet, believe it or not, in this fight. And Yoder's submission ability is probably a little bit underrated. You can look back at the Kish fight and say what you will. I know a lot of people are probably disrespecting Kish right now because of her last performance against Herrig, but I think overall in that fight with Kish, Yoder was right there. I mean, she could have easily won that fight. Now, again, you can say what you will because I know Kish hasn't looked the greatest thus far in her UFC career, but Yoder is a very capable submission fighter on the ground. And I think even though Hill's it's gotten better defensively on the ground, once Hill gets her back taken by Yoder, or once Yoder gets in position possibly on the ground to catch an arm or a limb, I think Yoder's going to probably get that tap. So I'm going to go against the grain here. I think that the original line I set was more than fair. Honestly, I thought minus 245, just a stylistical matchup. I mean, you have your striker versus grappler. And here, the grappler is going to have to get it to the ground. And I know it's going to be hard to do so, but I think Yoder's opportunistic. I mean, we were talking about that in other fights recently as well, in other podcasts for 213. And I think that's exactly what we're going to probably see here. So I think Hill is going to probably come out here and do what she does best. She's going to outstrike Yoder. But I think along the way in a 3-round fight, Yoder is going to find her way to Hill's back. I think Yoder might find her way on top on the ground. And if she does that, I think she is still levels above Hill on the ground. So I don't agree with the action coming in. If I was the people that are out there that are thinking about betting Hill, I would step away. And I would just probably sit back and watch how this fight plays out. I think if Hill is able to get this win, which obviously she's favored, so there's a good chance she does. If she is able to get this win, it's going to be another notch on a resume of improvement. I mean, she needs to face fighters like this to get herself better. So this is going to be a test for both fighters, really. You can say the same thing with Yoder. If she pulls off this victory, Yoder's really on the right path. I mean, she's getting better and, again, underrated a little bit as well. So as crazy as it sounds, I think Yoder submits Hill. There's definitely some value in that submission prop that's going to be out there at 5-9. So make sure you guys possibly check that out. Even the doubters out there, I think there is some value on Yoder by submission here. Call me crazy. We'll see how it plays out. But I'm going to pick the upset here, the upset special, and I'm going to go with Yoder. I'll probably be the only one on staff picks to pick Yoder here against Hill. I realize that, but I'll be crazy enough to do it. I think she does get the job done. So Yoder by sub is my pick.
And I will be the person that calls you crazy. I just don't see it. Yoder has some talent, but there's just, I think you're hyping her up way too much in terms of her grappling ability. Yeah, she got a little bit of takedown and a little bit of top control going against Kish, but I mean, it wasn't even close to what Felice Herrig was able to do to Kish. And I think Angela Hill could beat Felice Herrig right now. Hill, you know, she had her first run in the UFC and she was very inexperienced and they threw her in there against, you know, really good fighters. I mean, Tisha Torres, Rose Namajunas, it was not fair what happened to Angela Hill in her first UFC run. And, so she went and got more experience. She went to Invicta and she started tattooing girls. And then she ended up becoming the Invicta women's strawweight champion. She beat Livia Souza, a girl with an extremely good ground game that, I think is way better than Ashley Yoder's ground game. So, if Angela Hill could do that and go 5 rounds with Souza, I don't know how Ashley Yoder could submit her. I mean, Souza is an extremely talented grappler with excellent submission ability. She won the title with a submission. So, you know, I just don't see how Yoder could get on her back and tap her out. I think this is the easiest fight for Hill in her UFC run by a landslide. I mean, so far she's faced Rose Namajunas, Tisha Torres, and Jessica Andrade. I mean, it's been crazy. The competition they've thrown her against, basically 3 top 5 women strawweights in her UFC run. So it's time that Angela Hill had an easier fight. I don't think it'll be quite the level of her UFC debut against, Emily Kagan, but I do think that Tisha Torres is I do think that Angela Hill is going to have a significant striking edge here. I think that she can keep the fight standing. I don't see Yoder being able to get easy takedowns. And if she does, she's going to have to work for him. And Hill should probably be able to get back to her feet. So overall, I just think Angela Hill, even though she's at a reach disadvantage, her striking technique is so much better than Yoder's. I think that she lands some really good shots on the feet. And she either wins by decision or she might even be able to take Yoder out if Yoder really has trouble getting this fight to the floor and is forced into extended stand-up exchanges. So I understand why the betting line is going out of whack a little bit, but I think that it's reasonable that it has, because I just don't see Yoder taking advantage of Hill's weaknesses, because I don't think those weaknesses are as bad as people make them out to be. So my pick is definitely going to be Angela Hill. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card in the light heavyweight division, we have Jordan Johnson, who is 7-0, taking on Marcel Fortuna, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Johnson, minus 270, the comeback on Fortuna, plus 190. Right now, looking over five times, Johnson minus 240, the comeback on Fortuna, plus 200. So line dropped a little bit, but did get a little bit tighter as well. So there is two action coming into this fight. Fortuna definitely impressed. I mean, in his official UFC debut, no doubt about it. I mean, he's dropping back down after his KO win at heavyweight over Anthony I almost said Anthony Johnson, and that wasn't the case. It was Anthony Hamilton, excuse me. But after he knocked out Hamilton, which isn't really that surprising. I mean, even as a smaller guy at fighting at heavyweight or whatever, I mean, Anthony Hamilton has been chinny, and we all know that as well. But Fortuna, really where it's at with him is his ground game. I mean, the guy's a BJJ black belt. That's where he excels at more so than not. His wrestling's actually pretty decent. I mean, if he's facing another wrestler like he is here against Johnson, then it's a little bit tougher for him, obviously. But I mean, in most cases, Fortuna is the better wrestler when he goes in there. He's able to get the fight to the ground. He has obviously decent ground and pound and a good submission game to go along with it. So there's a lot of good things to like about Fortuna, and he's improving his stand-up. I mean, that wasn't a fluke, I think, against Hamilton, even though, you know, I don't expect that to happen against Johnson here in this fight. But I think Fortuna is becoming a well-rounded fighter, and he won't be an easy out at light heavyweight. But he is a BJJ guy, like I mentioned, but he does have some decent boxing. He's got a big right hand, and he does throw some solid knees and solid work in the clinch as well. So there's some improvements to be made for Fortuna, but he's definitely working hard and getting better. Now, Johnson, on the other hand, he's been one of these guys that's a hyped prospect. I mean, he's a two-time All-American wrestler, which is outstanding for MMA, as we all know, in the UFC, because these wrestlers that come in typically have a lot of success. They need to round out their games, but Johnson has been doing that. He's been traveling to various camps throughout his career, getting better, picking up some nice tools from different good training partners along the way. He's competed in BJJ as well, so he's got very good ground awareness. So he's got the jiu-jitsu in, he's got the wrestling in, his stand-up's getting a little bit better. He utilizes that jab pretty nice. I like that as far as the striking ability goes. And he's got a little bit of power. And this matchup against Fortuna, he's going to have a reach advantage as well. So he's going to have the wrestling advantage, he's going to have the reach advantage. I think the strike is going to be fairly close. And I think basically if Johnson doesn't get caught with something crazy, that big right hand of Fortuna or whatnot, or, you know, get submitted on the ground, I think he's going to win this fight. And I don't think he does. I think Johnson defensively is sound enough that he'll probably get the takedowns along the way, control this fight. Even if it stays standing and he struggles a little bit at times getting the takedown, I think that on the feet, he'll edge it out there as well and maybe even control Fortuna up against the cage. So I think it's Johnson's fight to win or lose. I mean, you're not seeing him as a huge favorite because respect to Fortuna again. I mean, he does have a path of victory here as well. So I think it should be a very good fight and a solid win for Johnson if and when he does get it. So I think the train keeps rolling for Johnson. I'm expecting some decent things from him. I expect him to keep on improving as well at age 28. So he's still got – I think he's basically going to hit his prime here soon when he gets that experience and that confidence. So we'll see how far Johnson can – get up that light heavyweight ladder. But in this fight here, I think it is his to win, and I think he's going to do so.
I'll admit I underestimated Marcel Fortuna in his UFC debut against Hamilton. I thought Hamilton would just be too big and strong since Fortuna was a light heavyweight fighting at heavyweight on short notice. And Fortuna used his speed, used his quickness, and showcased a little bit of pop, picking up his first knockout. Most all of his finishes before had been submissions. And he was able to clip Hamilton right in the button and put him out. So, you know, major props to him. But now that he's dropping back down to the light heavyweight division, he's not going to have that speed advantage anymore. Jordan Johnson is an elite athlete, an All-American wrestler, as Nick mentioned, and he is a guy that Fortuna, I think, is going to have some real problems with. On the feet, Johnson is active, he's quick, and while Fortuna has a little bit of pop in that right hand, I don't know if it, I think it was more of a taking advantage of a chinnier, slower, lumbering heavyweight than him just showcasing his nasty power. I think Jordan Johnson probably still has more punching power than Fortuna. So if he gets into stand-up exchanges, I expect Fortuna to be on the losing end of those. Where Fortuna will have his best chance to win is probably if he can get a submission. I mean, this guy clearly is an elite grappler, and Johnson is a great wrestler. And we've seen times where, you know, wrestling can smother a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu fighter, and sometimes wrestlers leave their neck exposed when a takedown and they get caught in a guillotine or something. So there's always going to be the chance that Fortuna can catch a flash submission, or maybe he sweeps him and gets something going on the ground. But I think it's going to be difficult for Fortuna because Johnson is going to be the one that dictates where this fight takes place. He has the wrestling edge. Fortuna's not going to be getting the takedowns. So if it goes to the ground, it's going to be because Johnson wants it to go to the ground. And Johnson being, you know, a really talented fighter out of the MMA lab, I just think this is a bad stylistic matchup for Fortuna. And while he looked good in his UFC debut, I think Johnson looked just as good in his UFC debut. And I think Johnson keeps those good times rolling. He's in a better prospect in the division. He's 3 years younger, and I expect Johnson will be ranked in the light heavyweight division after his performance on Friday night. So my pick is going to be Jordan Johnson. Now dropping down to the middleweight division, we have Brad Tavares, who is 14-4, taking on Elias Theodoro, who is 14-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Theodoro, minus 175, the comeback on Tavares at plus 135. Looking over at five dimes right now, it's Theodoro minus 120, even money on Tavares. So the line's been kind of floating back and forth, a little bit of action coming at Theodoro's way, rises it, the line climbs a little bit more, and then some dog action coming in Tavares' way, of course, as well, and it's been dropping it. So I think, honestly, right now, this line is probably better and more accurate than my opener of minus 175. So I do agree with the current price. It is closer to a pick 'em type of fight. Wasn't sure which way the public would go, so I leaned Theodoro's way a little bit more. Tavares hasn't really been in that public eye as much recently, so I think – and Theodoro obviously has. I mean, especially the social media aspect of things. He's just more of the popular fighter right now. He's more of the trendy fighter overall. I mean, there's a lot of like about Theodoro, especially his personality. I know that doesn't come into play here, but as far as the betting public goes, I mean, not the people that are studying the fights, you know, and putting in their homework and all that stuff. A lot of times when – you see some lines like this get made. I mean, I understand maybe the smarter bettors are going to come in one way, but overall in the public eye, you got to look at it a little bit differently. So some of the plus money that was taken early on, I think you guys did probably grab some value on Tavares. But again, I think Theodoro right now is just a little bit more in the public eye. So that's why I leaned a little more towards him. And I'm going to actually pick him to win this fight as well over Tavares. And I'll get into that here in a second why. But I do think it's going to be competitive because I think Tavares, I mean, throughout his career, he's been great and he's been improving. I mean, he's been one of these fighters that he put in the work. I mean, you could tell from the Ultimate Fighter show that he had talent, he had skill. But I mean, since he moved to Vegas and started training with Couture and crew, like Extreme Couture and crew and the training camp with Sefu and all the guys over there, he's been obviously getting excellent training, putting in the work. He's been improving his overall game. His takedown defense is getting better. Well, has gotten better, I should say. His hands, his boxing, his timing, I mean, his striking, everything about Tavares' game has gotten legit. And it's because of the time and work that he's put in. It's unfortunately for him, when he's run into problems, it's been about that chin. I mean, he's a bit chinny. He's been only knocked out twice in his career, but you could tell. I mean, he's been rocked, you know, even more so officially, I should say, he's been knocked out twice in his career, but he's been rocked in fights. I mean, you could tell he's a bit chinny to trust a little bit. And I think that that's why you got to lean a little bit more towards Theodoro, even though I think that Tavares is the better striker here in this matchup. And I think that wrestling will neutralize each other out because Tavares has good takedown defense. So Teodoro is going to probably look to get some takedowns along the way and control this fight by bullying Tavares up against the cage and looking to get it to the floor, but it's not going to be easy. So I think they could neutralize each other out in the wrestling aspect. I think Tavares is the better striker, but I just don't trust him as much. I do trust Teodoro's chin a little bit more so. And I think he does have that underrated power that, I mean, even though Teodoro is not knocking everybody out in the UFC roster, he still has enough power to generate a knockout here in his fight against Tavares. I mean, one fight that sticks out to me in my mind, I know it's a different matchup there, but Bosch and Tavares. I mean, Tavares was coming out winning that fight pretty clear. Bosch was able to land and, you know, and put Tavares out along, you know, along the way. So I think I could see something like that happen where Tavares is looking pretty good and Teodoro lands maybe in round two and catches that chin of Tavares and puts him out. So I think if he doesn't do that, it'll be a close fight. It'll go back and forth and it's probably going to be a split decision type of fight. So it is a dog or pass situation regardless. So that's why I do agree with this pick'em type of line more so now than what my original opener was. So I'm going to side still though with Teodoro. I just, like I said, I trust his chin a little bit more. I think even though he has a busy life outside of the UFC, I think right now he's in a better place overall. And I think he can continue to maybe climb back up that ladder and make himself a little bit more relevant. And again, from the fans' perspective, I mean, they do have a marketable fighter in Teodoro from the UFC. He's got all those side sponsorships outside of the UFC as well with Per Plus and whatnot. So he's a very likable, very marketable fighter. I think it's good for Teodoro to probably get the win for the company for the middleweight division as well, so more so than it is Tavares. So there's a lot of things to like about this fight. I hope it's a good one. I think it can be. So, but I'm going to still lean a little bit more towards Teodoro. And again, it's mainly coming down to trusting his chin a little bit more so.
Yeah, chin strength is huge in this fight. You know, Brad Tavares is a talented fighter, and if he had a chin, he could be a contender. I mean, he was a contender in the middleweight division. But the chin and just inactivity, injuries have really set him back significantly. You know, this is a guy with solid overall striking ability, good technique, good pace, decent takedown defense. He just can't take a good punch. I mean, Tim Boach put him out basically with a jab. So I know that Elias Teodoro is not as technical on the feet as Tavares, but it only takes a couple good shots and Tavares is going down. Also, Teodoro can mix in the takedowns. Theodoro's more active. Teodoro has been less injury prone. So he has a lot of things going for him. You know, Teodoro's a guy that I think the UFC has been hyping up a little bit, and they're actually about the same age, but Teodoro, I think, has a little bit less wear and tear, has taken less punishment. So, you know, there's a lot of things to like about Teodoro. The one thing, though, that is always going to be in the back of my head is Theodoro's performance against Thiago Santos. You know, that was a guy with a similar style to Brad Tavares, a guy that wants to keep it standing, work his kicks, work his striking, and just stuff takedowns and punish his opponent. And if Teodoro gets into that same type of mindset as he did against Thiago Santos, then there is a definite chance that Brad Tavares has a path to victory here. He just has to keep this standing, not get knocked out, and just out-technique Teodoro on the feet, because Theodoro's technique is not as good. It's just, you know, as interesting and aggressive a fighter as he is, he still just doesn't look comfortable doing a lot of things. Like there's just something missing. So I can completely understand people siding with Brad Tavares here, because if Tavares can keep it standing, if he can protect his chin, he could clearly win this fight. But I do like Theodoro's pace. I like his aggression and I like his well-roundedness. And if he can get any of that stuff going, then he'll win. So I have to side with Teodoro, but I am definitely urging caution here, because if Tavares keeps it standing, this is a whole different ballgame. But my pick is going to be Elias Teodoro. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Jared Cannonier, who is 9-2, taking on short notice injury replacement UFC newcomer Nick Rorick, who is 7-0. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Alpine Cannoneer -380, the comeback on Rorik at +260. Public early action on, not just public action, I mean some smart bettors obviously early on as well, have driven the line down. It's now -260 for Cannoneer, the comeback on Rorik at +200. So a lot of people that are doing their homework, studying on Rorik, know what kind of fighter he is, and he's not bad. I mean, there's definitely a lot to like about Rorik as far as watching film study on him and seeing what kind of fighter he is. He's undefeated. He's a prospect, obviously. I mean, age 30, he's getting, you know, obviously he's not on the youngest end of things, but at the same time, he still has a lot of good fight left in him, and especially just now getting on the UFC roster. But the problem I have with Rorik is the level of competition he's faced. I mean, he's looked good, really good in most of his fights, but that those have been cans that he's been going against. I mean, low level competition. I think he only has one solid win on his resume. So that's a head scratcher to me. And he is stepping in on short notice and fighting a very, very good proven fighter right now at light heavyweight and Cannoneer. So that's why I open it a little bit higher, because I think that even though Rorik does have a path of victory in this fight, and it's basically his wrestling, and he does have okay striking as well. I'm not saying that, but you know, I just think the short notice of, aspect of things and the big step up in competition, I'm just not sold on Rorik yet. But as far as skill set go, from the limited footage that is out there on him, I mean, there's not a ton of footage on Rorik out there, but for what I've heard and seen, I mean, he is a pretty well-rounded fighter. He's got okay stand-up, but he is better on the ground. He goes after takedowns pretty relentlessly in his fights. And, you know, he basically has really good ground and pound and works the sub game pretty decent as well. So he has a lot of good things to like about him. And Cannoneer, if you anything you could say negative about him is his takedown defense. And I think the ratio is only about 30% success rate. I mean, so that means that most guys are taking him down. Now, he's faced good competition so far in his last fight with Glover. Glover was able to get him down every round, control him a little bit. But Cannoneer, not being subbed in that fight against a guy like Glover, I think people don't realize how good Glover's jiu-jitsu is. So surviving on the ground with a guy like Glover is pretty impressive in my opinion, even though he needs to keep that fight upright more so than not. So in this fight, that's the same case. Cannoneer, I think, is the better overall fighter. He's the more explosive athlete on the feet. I think he has that knockout power that he could give Rorik some serious fits if Rorik doesn't get this fight down on the ground. And as the fight progresses, obviously, Cannoneer's still going to be the fresher of the two with Rorik coming in on short notice. So if Cannoneer can stay off his back, which I think in a 3-round fight here, even if he does get put on his back in the first round, I don't think Rorik's able to finish him on the ground. So Cannoneer should be able to probably stay upright as the fight progresses and maybe round two, round three or whatnot, and have his moments in this fight for sure. So I do think that Cannoneer deserves to be a solid favorite, especially with Rorik coming in on short notice. And like I said, kind of a sketchy resume where he hasn't really beat great fighters, but I have been impressed with Rorik's skill set. And I think if he does get the upset win here over Cannoneer, man, we got a serious player at 205 pounds. You got to respect the guy then. So this is a big step up in competition for Rorik. I just think, unfortunately for him, it's not going to probably work out as well as he anticipates. So I think Cannoneer is going to get the win, and he's looked pretty good. If he could tighten up that takedown defense, man, the guy is a real player at 205 pounds. I mean, they're not really giving him easy fights right now. So a lot of good things to like about Cannoneer. I think he probably does get the victory here over Rorik.
I'm definitely concerned about the wrestling. I mean, in Jared Cannoneer's last two fights, I mean, he has been taken down repeatedly. Against Kudalaba, he got taken down 6 times. Against Glover Teixeira, he got taken down 3 times, and he just basically stayed on his back the whole time and got guard passed 11 times. I mean, it was not a good performance. I will say, though, that Cannoneer's conditioning is second to none. I mean, against Kudalaba, he got taken down repeatedly, and then in the third round, Kudalaba started to get tired, and Cannoneer just stuffed every takedown and then just started beating the brakes off of him, ended up winning a decision, fight of the night even. And against Glover, he was still going hard in the third round, and, you know, he was landing some good shots. It's just he couldn't stay off of his back against Glover, and Glover smartly took it to the ground because Cannoneer is so athletic and quick that he probably would have won a stand-up fight against Glover. And that's saying a lot because Glover is one of the best fighters in the light heavyweight division. So, now Nick Rorik, watching him fight, he has not faced the best competition, but I mean, the guy is a wrestler and he looks to close the distance. He looks to get fights to the floor, and that is a huge thing to be concerned about, because if Jared Cannoneer has not improved that takedown defense, then he could just wind up on his back over the course of 3 rounds and get beat up and lose a decision. I don't see Rorik submitting him. Glover barely even tried to submit Cannoneer. So Cannoneer's submission defense seems to be on point. But I could see Rorik grinding this out. So that's definitely a reason to not be, you know, putting Cannoneer in parlays and stuff, even though he is, favored. So I'm siding with Cannoneer though, because I mean, Rorik's taking this fight on short notice. I still am definitely not a huge believer in Rorik's grappling, even though he does get takedowns and fights and wins. He has not faced very good competition, and I've seen him in fights against guys that he should have smashed, and he barely won a split decision type of situation, or barely won a decision. I still think Rorik has a ways to go with his development, but he has improved since switching over to Team Elevation and training with guys like Curtis Blades. So that could be taking him to a next level that maybe we haven't seen. But overall, I'm going to side with Cannoneer. I think he can get a knockout or maybe win a decision, but I am super concerned about those takedowns and the wrestling of Rorik. So I do think that there's a possibility that Rorik does win this fight in his UFC debut, but I am going to side with Cannoneer. Now, moving on to the lightweight division, we have Mark Jacasey, who is 12-0, taking on Drakkar Close, who is 6-0-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Jacasey, minus 260, the comeback on Close at plus 180. Early on, it was all Jacasey action. He got bet up to over 300. Now, right now, it's minus 260, though, at five dimes for Jacasey. And the comeback on Close is at plus 220. So line has dropped back down a little bit to basically where I opened it. Exactly. Line margins have tightened up, though, a little bit as well. This is an interesting fight. I mean, Jacasey, what can you say about the guy? His last fight was really, really impressive. I mean, that was one of the best knockouts for sure of the year. I mean, that's what kind of athleticism and skill this guy has on the feet for sure. The guy, I mean, there's been a lot of hype around him. He's only 24 years old. So before he made his UFC debut, a lot of people were saying how good this guy's going to be, a future contender at lightweight. I mean, the guy's legit. I haven't been that impressed with him overall, to be honest with you, thus far. I think that he's performed well. He's doing what he has to do. I mean, his win over Sujewski was nice. His win over Perez, he was getting beat in that fight. Perez ended up gassing out. That's why he ended up getting that win. I think if a fresh Perez in that fight ends up beating him. But, I mean, that's the fighting game. So there's no question that cardio comes into play. So you got to credit Jacasey for having the better cardio, for, you know, being put in tough positions along the way and having a hard, hard fight for him and coming through. So that's all growth for him. And I think that's all going to end up paying dividends in the future for him. I mean, this is good, solid experience he's getting. And then his last fight against Paklin, I mean, he just, like I said, he destroyed him. It wasn't even a fight. So I would have liked to see how that played out a little bit more. But here against Close, it's not going to be an easy fight at all. Close obviously made a pretty impressive debut. I know he's not going to get that kind of respect because the win that he got was over a guy like Devin Powell, but and Jacasey has that hype around him that's more so than Close, even though Close had a little bit of hype around him as well. I mean, trains at the MMA lab. A lot of the guys from the lab have been saying for years how good this guy is and how watch out for him. Once he gets in the UFC, he's going to make some waves. So, you know, his fight was a little bit, it was a good solid performance for Close, but it was a little bit lackluster. I guess a lot of people were expecting more supposedly from Close in that fight, but I think it was pretty tough because it was a pretty good performance, I should say, because Powell's a tough dude. So I think it was okay. And this fight here against Jacasey, he knows what he's up against, Close does, and he's going to have to kind of be that grinder. He's going to have to make this fight miserable for Jacasey. He's going to have to kind of do what Perez did and just put him in bad spots along the way, but maintain it. That cardio has to be up to par because it's going to be a grueling fight for both guys. And I really think he could do that. I mean, like I said, Jacasey is definitely the more talented, the more athletic, the more capable finisher in this fight, but I do think that Close is going to be the one that's pushing the pace, that's pushing Jacasey up against the cage, that's closing that gap, that's putting him on his back, that's controlling him, that's grinding him out a little bit as well. So I think it is a dog or pass situation. And if Jacasey comes away with the win here, this is going to be another solid notch in his resume. And again, another step towards improvement, because this is no easy out. I know overall the public thinks Jocasey's going to win this fight, no problem. But again, the betting action has been a little bit more two-way because I think the smart bettors out there are going to take a shot at the underdog. I think that, you know, close probably does have some value at plus 220 range that he's at right now for sure, because this is a hard fight. So for me, I'm going to go with the underdog. I think that until Jocasey, I'm a little bit skeptical with his skill set because I've seen him be put on his back a little bit too much. And I'd like to see if that takedown defense kind of hold up a little bit more so than it has. I mean, granted, he's gotten up off his back and he's done well in those fights. So maybe I'm underestimating him a little bit too much. But to me, this would be another point where he proves that he is kind of living up to that hype. This would be a solid win, like I mentioned. So for me, until he proves otherwise, I got to go with close because I think right now he's just further ahead of Jocasey overall in his game. And I think he's just going to push the higher pace and probably win on the scorecard. So my pick is going to be close to pull off the upset win over Jocasey.
I think this fight is going to be very competitive. Both fighters are extremely talented. And, man, I can completely understand siding with Drakkar Close because of the stylistic matchup. I mean, Close is all about pressure. He was a really talented wrestler. I mean, this guy, if he can get inside on Jocasey, then there's a really good chance that he just takes away half of Jocasey's game. I mean, Jocasey throws these brutal kicks, spinning kicks, just all kinds of kicks. And they were disgusting in his last fight. He basically opened with two really, really heavy kicks against Teemu Pakelin that forced Pakelin to just get inside and go after him because he didn't want to eat those anymore. And then Pakelin just walked right into a stiff right hand and got knocked out in 30 seconds. So that could happen in this fight. I mean, Jocasey is that talented of an athlete and he has that much potential. But Close has the wrestling. He has the pressure. He has the pace. I mean, his UFC debut against Powell, I mean, he tore Powell up. He got takedowns. He pressed him. He pressed the action consistently. He was in his face the whole time, landing heavy strikes. My only thing that I'm worried about is that I'm overvaluing Close based on that performance because Powell definitely is probably one of the lowest tier fighters in the UFC lightweight division. And maybe Powell just made Close look that good. Because honestly, if Powell faced Jocasey, I don't know if Powell gets out of the first round because Jocasey has so much power and is that capable of not just winning, but destroying people. So I could be overvaluing Close, but I really like his game. And I think that it could be a bad matchup. I mean, in Jocasey's fight against Frankie Perez, he got put on his back. He lost the second round. And then it looked like he could end up losing that fight, but then he kind of just dug deep and won the third round. So against Close, if he's facing a similar type of opponent, if Close can get those takedowns, and I think he can keep him down, and then I think he can do it for more than one round. And I also think Close can just put the pressure on the feet as well and kind of take away several of Jocasey's weapons. He's going to have to be cautious about the power, though. Jocasey does have more pure one-punch explosive power than Close does. But overall, I like Close's game. I think that he gets in Jocasey's grill and takes away several of Jocasey's weapons, and I think he can get the takedown. So I'm going to side with Close as well. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the welterweight division, we have the Tough 25 finale bout between finalists Diego Lima, who is 14-5, and Jesse Taylor, who is 32-15. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up at Taylor, minus 265, the comeback on Lima, plus 185. Right now, looking over it five times, it is minus 205 for Taylor, comeback on Lima, plus 165. So, line dropped a little bit, line margins have tightened up a little bit as well, and there is a little bit more action coming in on Lima as an underdog here. It's tough with Lima, man. I tell you what, a lot of people, honestly, the way he's performed thus far in the UFC, have lost respect for him. They don't want to bet him. I mean, if you look at the fights even outside of the UFC thus far, he's not very popular at the betting window these days anymore. And it's because of that chin. They can't trust it. I mean, he's been knocked out 4 times in his career, and it seems like, I mean, he's just been disappointing a little bit. I mean, he's not like his brother, Douglas, that's for sure. I mean, again, I'm not trying to disrespect the guy, because I think he has made some strides and improvements, especially recently. He's looking a little bit better. But as far as the betting window goes, I wasn't sure that he was going to get that much respect, even if it was stylistically this was a different type of matchup, because Taylor is not exactly a knockout threat on the feet as much as some of the other guys that Lima's faced in the past, although Taylor does have that wrestling power. So, yeah, it is what it is here. I just wasn't sure how much respect Lima would gauge. And I do think that Taylor came off on this show, and even from the start of the show, I mean, he was the guy that everybody was looking for to probably win it. He was one of the favorites going into the show, and he's performed really well. I mean, if you look at the wins Taylor has thus far, you know, I mean, making it to the finals, it's been pretty impressive. I mean, Baghdad, people can say whatever they want about Baghdad, but he's not an easy out. I mean, Taylor was able to do what he does best in that fight and win that fight as well. His win over Hassan, that sub that he got, was pretty impressive. Hassan's not an easy out either. He's dangerous on the feet. But Taylor, again, did what he does best there and got the W there as well. And then, of course, his fight with Taylor, or with James Krause, I should say, Jesse Taylor versus James Krause in the semifinal fight that he just had, that we just got to see, I should say. That was pretty impressive, because James Krause stylistically is the type of fighter that could definitely catch Jesse Taylor by submission on the ground or even on the feet, because he can obviously outstrike Taylor. So it's stylistically, it's a tough matchup. Jesse Taylor had to get him to the ground and avoid the submission game and avoid reversals or whatnot. And Krause actually looked very improved in that fight as far as his wrestling goes, offensively especially. He was able to get Jesse Taylor down, and not a lot of people do that. So it was pretty impressive from Krause, to say the least. And it was more impressive that Jesse Taylor actually fought a very disciplined fight. When he was in James Krause's guard, he kept his hands where they needed to be. He kept himself out of trouble. He scrambled out of bad spots. I mean, his submission defense, which in my opinion is problematic at times, to say the least. I mean, that's one thing with Jesse Taylor. He always seems to get the fight where he wants it, but all of a sudden, you know, I mean, he gives up an arm, he gives up a choke, he gives up something. You're thinking, man, this guy's, you know, winning the fight, and then he just does a bonehead move. Fight IQ at times, he just gets caught. He's been subbed 14 times in his career. I mean, his losses, that tells you a lot right there. So, with a guy like Krause, it's a dangerous matchup. But Jesse Taylor was focused, and he looked good in beating Krause. In fact, that sub that he ended up getting, that choke, was pretty nice, man. I mean, that was very impressive. So when Taylor's on his game, he's a tough guy to beat. I mean, that's why, again, he was one of the favorites going in. So you know stylistically what's going to happen in this fight. Taylor's going to come forward. He's going to look for the takedowns against Lima. Lima's going to try to sprawl brawl and probably knock Taylor out. Or if he does end up on his back, Lima does have some nice chokes. He does have a good guillotine choke. He has an underrated submission game. So it is going to be problematic a little bit for Taylor on the ground. He's going to have to fight another very smart fight. But in doing so, I think he is going to get the victory. So I think it's his fight to win or lose. I think he's able to control the tempo of this fight. He's able to bully Lima around a little bit. He's able to get some takedowns along the way. It's not going to be easy, because Lima has improved his takedown defense, but I do think it's Taylor's fight to win or lose. So unless, again, the Taylor that, you know, even right before he got inside the UFC, he's been dropped down back down to welterweight, and he's gotten caught in submissions about in a few fights. So if that Taylor shows up, he's going to get beat, obviously. But if the Taylor that's hungry, that's fighting smart, that's in great shape, that's focused, everything lines up properly for him, he's going to win this fight. And I think he should be favored in this fight. So I'll pick Taylor to win. It's just, you know, where the price is right now, I think it is probably a dog or pass situation. And that's why you see some early action coming in that way. So I don't disagree with that, but I still think Taylor's going to get the job done here. So my pick is going to be Taylor to win and become the Ultimate Fighter redemption winner. And you know what, man? I mean, I know it's kind of corny to say, but it is kind of a storybook ending if Taylor does get the job done. I mean, with all the potential, you know, and everything that kind of fell out the first time around for him, it makes sense that he comes back years later and does eventually get that win. So I kind of want to see him to get the W here. It would definitely be, excuse me, a nice feather in his cap, because he's 34 years old. Who knows how much longer Taylor has, honestly, in his MMA career. So this is an important fight for both gentlemen, but more so for Taylor. So I hope he gets that storybook ending that he's looking for. So my pick's officially Taylor to defeat Lima.
I guess I'm just a bad person, but I just don't believe in the fairy tale endings. Jesse Taylor's had a nice run on The Ultimate Fighter, but it doesn't take away from his run before The Ultimate Fighter, where he was awful. I mean, you look at his performance recently. I mean, he has lost 6 of his last 9 fights, dating back to about 2014. I mean, the guy just, and every single one of them, or almost every single one of them, has been by submission. He has 15 losses in his career. 14 are by submission. So, I mean, Diego Lima has a really good ground game. I mean, his first run through the Ultimate Fighter, on Tough 19, he was submitting opponents left and right. So if this fight does go to the ground, I think Diego Lima taps him out. If it stays standing, Diego Lima should win it. He's the better striker. He does not have a good chin. That is absolutely clear. We all know this. So Lima has to protect the chin, but you know, Jesse Taylor's not much of a striker. He's a guy that wants to use his size and strength and drag it to the floor and wear you out and beat you up and maybe look for a TKO or a submission of his own. But when his takedown or when his submission defense is still so fatally flawed, even if it was better against James Krause, I mean, it was better against James Krause because James Krause is a lightweight and Jesse Taylor has typically been a middleweight for his career. I just think he was able to outpower some of these things. But Diego Lima, he is a big welterweight. I mean, this guy's fought at welterweight his whole career. He could fight at middleweight if he really wanted to. So I just think that Jesse Taylor is in for a bad stylistic matchup. Maybe Taylor gets some takedowns, but I don't see him getting takedowns for 15 straight minutes and not getting caught. I don't see him, not getting caught on the feet either. Maybe it's just the cynic in me, but he beat up a bunch of guys that, you know, are trying to work their way back to the UFC, but I just don't think that he could beat Diego Lima here. I think Lima is fighting very smart on the show. He is fighting within himself. He knows his own limitations, and I don't think Jesse Taylor could take advantage of those limitations. So I see Diego Lima, tapping out Jesse Taylor at some point because that's just what Jesse Taylor does. I think Taylor took advantage of the show where you're fighting like 3-4 times in a matter of 8 weeks. But in an actual training camp, when you're actually preparing for a real fight, then that's the only focus. Jesse Taylor gets tapped out. That's just what happens in the regular world. So I think he goes back to the regular world, and I think Diego Lima gets this victory. So my pick is going to be Diego Lima. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have Michael Johnson, who is 18-11 in the lightweight division, taking on UFC newcomer and World Series of Fighting lightweight champion, undefeated Justin Gaethje, who is 17-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
This is a tough one, especially considering the public. You just never know which way they're going to go with a fight like this, especially with Johnson. He's been a favorite of mine as far as betting window goes. Johnson's made me some cash through the years for sure. So he's been typically a little bit underrated, but not this case. I opened Gaethje -130 to come back on Johnson -110. So virtually a pick-em type of fight with a very slight lean towards Gaethje. When I put up lines on World Series of Fighting, and of course that's World Series of Fighting, it's not the UFC, and the level of competition that Gaethje was facing was not up to UFC level, but he did face some okay competition. It's not like he was facing all bums over there. So he got bet up, man. I mean, people love betting Gaethje because of the warrior that he is. I mean, the stylistic matchups in most cases for Gaethje favor him pretty well, and the guy's just an aggressive beast on the feet. So it's hard to tell who the public would like in this spot, honestly, whether it's going to be Johnson or it's going to be Gaethje. But I think early on, the bettors coming in on Johnson weren't buying the hype. They weren't buying all that. They were just looking at the matchup and thinking, okay, this is basically a striker versus striker matchup. Both these guys have wrestling. Both these guys can neutralize each other out in that aspect. Both of them have decent takedown defense, and it's going to be striker versus striker. So in that case, Johnson's a little bit longer. He's been facing some of the best strikers in the UFC for a while now, and he's been doing pretty good. I mean, Johnson is definitely one of the best strikers in the lightweight division. His knockout power is ridiculous. His takedown defense, like I mentioned, is pretty good. So he's able to keep the fight upright in most cases and win. So that's why I think everybody coming in, they realize Gaethje is a very hittable fighter. If you watch his fights, I mean, the one thing that you could say negatively about him is that his face, it takes a lot of punishment. I mean, the guy eats punches. Now, of course, he's never been knocked out, so his chin is solid enough to take that kind of punishment. But against Johnson, there's a higher risk there for sure, because Johnson has that special type of knockout power where it doesn't seem like it's a big punch and he knocks people out. I mean, that's how dangerous this guy is. So Gaethje cannot afford to eat a lot of punches from Johnson. And I think, again, that's why a lot of the public overall coming in his way, it's minus 165 for Johnson right now. Gaethje's plus 145. So a lot of action coming in Johnson's way. A lot of people think it's a wrap. Gaethje's going to eat too many punches and he's going to be out. I'm not so sure, man. I think this is going to be a tough fight. This is going to be a closer fight than people anticipate. I think Gaethje's going to be able to hold his own. Of course, he is going to, you know, eat some punches from Johnson, but I think he's going to deliver just as many. And that the leg kicks that Gaethje offers, if he can get on track with those leg kicks early on, he's going to change the whole aspect of this fight. I think those leg kicks are going to be a big factor. I mean, the explosiveness in Johnson's power is going to probably dwindle away as this fight goes on a little bit if Gaethje can hang in there. So I don't know. This is a tough fight for me. And again, typically for those of you guys that know me, you know of like Johnson and how he matches up with a lot of fighters in the lightweight division. Here, though, I'm going to stay away from Johnson, and I'm actually going to pick Gaethje. I think that making his UFC debut, obviously, as a champion from an organization, you know, he's hungry to get there and prove that he belongs amongst the best lightweights in the world. I mean, a lot of us have thought Gaethje deserved to be in the top 15 in the world anyway. I mean, he's one of those guys that's been one of the best lightweights outside of the UFC. So coming into the UFC, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And the UFC did him no favors by giving him a top five guy right away. So with all that being said, I think people are underestimating Gaethje just a little bit. I think he can compete with the best in the UFC. This is definitely a tough test, though, right away off the rip. Yeah, but I think it's one that he could pass. So we'll see what happens here, how this fight plays out. I think it will be fun. Hopefully it's fun. I hope it lasts a couple rounds at least, because these guys are going to really be thrown down and it's going to be fireworks for all of us. I mean, it could be one of the fights of the year if it plays out like we all think. So looking forward to this fight. I will go against the public grain here, and I'm going to pick Gaethje to win. I know that's, again, it seems like it's not going to be a popular opinion out there, and I do get it, and I respect Johnson, and I know he could probably finish this fight, but I think Gaethje's going to hang in there enough and do some damage along the way as well. So my pick is going to be Gaethje to pull off the slight upset win over Johnson.
Justin Gaethje is one of the most exciting fighters to be making his UFC debut in recent years. I mean, this guy, undefeated, 17-0, and almost every single one of his wins has been a highlight reel. That's why he gave himself the, you know, that's why he's got the nickname, the highlight. I mean, this guy has devastating leg kicks, just ferocious. He has good power in both hands, heavy uppercuts, heavy hooks. He swings everything with bad intentions, and he has good wrestling to fall back on, although he almost never uses it. He primarily just uses it defensively. If somebody else is looking to take the floor, he can reverse the position because of just his natural wrestling instincts. Now, the problem, of course, is Gaethje throws caution to the wind. He is reckless. He is wild. If he throws naked leg kicks, I mean, he just leaves his chin right there to get blasted. Sometimes, I mean, he doesn't use head movement at all. His defense is basically the fact that he has a good chin. I mean, he just eats shots and then lands a counter off of getting blasted. And sometimes, and most of the time it works, because he hasn't been facing guys with really good striking technique, with really good ability to just take you out if you do that. I mean, he's been facing Luis Firmino and Luis Palomino. He's been getting in these wars, and they've been crazy entertaining, and they've been so much fun. And Gaethje is an extremely exciting fighter, but those are the type of fighters that you shouldn't be getting in wars with, because you should just be beating them convincingly. And yeah, he ends up getting the TKO or the doctor stoppage, but like, Gaethje is taking way too much punishment in these fights. And against a guy like Michael Johnson, who is just terrifying with his ability to take people out. I mean, Johnson just smashed Dustin Poirier, like made him look silly. You know, smashed Gleison Tebow. Like, when he faces guys that he can find an opening in their stand-up, he is going to punish you. I mean, Johnson was lighting up Khabib Nurmagomedov on the feet too, before Nurmagomedov went to the wrestling. So while I understand that Justin Gaethje has paths to victory, I just think the flaws in his defense are too big to ignore, and Michael Johnson is not going to not miss those flaws. So Johnson takes advantage of the defense, and I expect Johnson really punishes Gaethje, and this is the first fight that Gaethje's defense really bites him in the butt. So my pick is going to be Michael Johnson. I think he wins, and he probably wins by knockout at some point in this fight. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for the Ultimate Fighter Season 25 finale. Now, our premium bets will be released later today, this Thursday, following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker Premium member. If we have any free plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.